I think for all these years, I had thought I was less of a human being because I didn't have a name. I wasn't referred to as a human being. You know, we refer to people by their names. I know Anne because she's called Anne, you know. But for all those years, no one ever took the initiative in some way to say he's a human being.
Welcome to Family Life Today, where we want to help you pursue the relationships that matter most. I'm Ann Wilson.
And I'm Dave Wilson, and you can find us at familylifetoday.com or on our Family Life app.
This is Family Life Today.
So I think every young boy and girl goes on a journey to find out who they are. You know, my dad walked out of my life when I was 7 years old. I didn't realize in that moment, but I would spend the next 20 years trying to discover, who am I? Hmm. I didn't have that foundation.
Yeah.
I think every person has that journey. And I thought my journey was remarkable. We've got a guy in the studio today. You talk about a remarkable journey and story of finding identity.
Didn't you feel like you were like watching a movie?
Yeah, just reading his book.
Yes, it's amazing.
Let me see if I can say his name right. Peter Mutabazi. No?
Yes. No, you got it right.
All right.
Mutabazi.
I mean, I wanted to get the accent right.
No, you didn't get that part
when
right.
When you just said it a minute ago, I was like, I'll never be able to say it as cool as you just did. Peter Mutabazi?
Yes, you said it right. Peter Mutabazi.
Yeah, well, your story, and it's in your book we have sitting right here, Now I Am Known, How a Street Kid Turned Foster Dad Found Acceptance and True Worth. Mm. So I am so excited for our listeners to hear your story, but you've never been here, so welcome to Family Life Today.
Thank you. It's a beautiful facility and beautiful people, so kind that they will come to us and showed us around. So we love this place.
And we had a pretty good meal.
Yes. Oh, yes.
So tell the world what you do, and of course, we want to get your story, but you're an entrepreneur. You've got all kinds of things going on. I've already mentioned in your subtitle that you're a foster dad, but don't go there yet.
Okay.
Start at the beginning. Tell us where your life all began.
Oh, my life, where it began. I might need about a week to finish that, to go through my life, you know. But really, I come from a small little town or small village called Kabale. It's at the border of Uganda and Rwanda. You know, and during my time when I was born, life was different. You know, life was miserable in every shape, form you could imagine. Actually, I did not have a name until when I was 2 years old. Reasons are because for every 100 children were born, 60 would die before the age of two. So moms were afraid to give kids names because they weren't sure they will make it. So once I made it at two, my mom named me Habyarimana, which means a gift given to me by God. So that's what it means. So that's kind of the world that I come from, that from birth, you didn't know you'll make it, you know?
I mean, do you remember not having a name, or you're too young?
I was too young. I don't remember.
But you were told they waited till you were 2 years old.
2 years old. You know, and people ask me, so what did they call you? Well, I was called the boy, you know, the boy. And because I was the oldest boy, and that's how long it took for me to get a name, you know. So you can imagine for every mother in that community, for every mother in that village to not, you know, to be pregnant, but you can't tell people because you're not sure, will they survive? Will they make it? Mm. And that was me. And then, of course, I think I began to realize that life was different at the age of 3, 4, because at 3 and 4, I would go fetch water about 3 miles away. You know, think about at 4 years old with the other 4 little-year-olds and 5-year-olds, you trek through the village to go get water because your family did not have clean water.
No other adults went with you?
Well, most of them, they were also doing something else. So my mom would be in the garden. She wouldn't come. You know, she's digging that in the garden to produce
and
food.
And what
so
would
she
you carry it
in? A jerry can. You know, it's a little small, like a 1 gallon jerry can. You know, we call
That's
them plastic.
Heavy.
Well, yeah, it is heavy.
For a 4-year-old.
Yes, it is heavy.
And where
and
was
you're
your
walking
dad?
How far? 2 miles?
3 miles
Look at us
away.
Asking all these questions on top
three
of each
miles
other.
Away.
3 miles there and then 3 miles back.
3 miles back, yes.
Six mile walk in bare feet?
Bare feet. No shoes, nothing, you know? And you did this every day, you know? So think about, like, I never had a childhood because your childhood was spent looking for those small family needs that you had to meet at the age of four. So I'd go get water, and that was for drinking.
You was know, it not- clean water? Because when we've been in Africa and helping dig wells, often they would go and get dirty water, diseased right. water.
Yes, but this wasn't clean, but it was in a level of cleanliness.
Clean enough. You know,
it was clean enough to drink because it was coming through the streams on top of the mountain. So that meant it had less of bacteria. So that's what we'd drink. But then the rest would, you know, to use for our clothes or washing utensils, would use water that animals drink from, cows and anything else. You know, so at the age of four, I could do all that. But also my dad wasn't there because sometimes I think in some tribes, you know, men don't get to participate in today's life of a family. Or he was working somewhere else, so he wasn't at home in so many ways. So my life as a kid, you know, that's all I can remember, just misery. When it came to food, we never had enough food to eat, you know. We could not have beans and potatoes because that was too much food. We'd eat beans today and then eat potatoes the next day. So we can spread the little we have for a little longer. So that was really my life. I had my mom and my dad, but they never told me to dream. No one ever said, Peter, one day you'll be a teacher or dream to be something, because there was nothing around us that really gave us the glimpse of hope.
You were just surviving every day.
Absolutely. But if your mom, if you're a mother and you can't feed your child for a day, how do you tell them to dream? Mm. You know, how do you tell them there's a future for you when you can't see it for yourself?
Yeah.
But neither can you see it for anyone else. And it wasn't just my family. It was everyone around you, you know. So you're surrounded by hopelessness. But all you think is that. There's nothing else you could imagine.
Did you go to school?
Well, at this point, no. I did not go to school, you know, because I needed to help family.
Yeah.
But also they could not afford $5 to send me to school. So I had to work and help family at the age of four. Then at four, you know, I think at age four, that's when you begin to realize, you know, my dad is different from other dads, you know. I would visit other families. Then I would see that their dads are different from my dad. And here's the reason why. My dad was the meanest human being that I knew. My dad was mean in every shape, form you could think of. Towards me as a son, but also to my mother as well. So I saw the worst rage you could think of. You know, as kids, we work so hard to please our parents, you know. You go fetch water, you bring it, and you hope your dad is going to say, that was good job. For me, I never had one kind word from my dad. This is what I had from my dad every day. You'll never amount to anything. You're good for nothing. You're stupid. There's no hope for you. And I wish you were never born so I never had to feed you.
Oh, Peter, like those are just death words.
Exactly.
Curse words.
Just
every day.
Every day.
You say that to your siblings too?
And to my mother as well.
Every day.
Every day. So think about, you're at the age of four and that's all you hear from your father. How do you dream? How do you hope there's tomorrow for you when someone says, I wish you were never born so I don't have to feed you? So that meant the food we had sometimes was at his mercy. Like, he chooses to buy that food. So as a kid, there's no way I could hope. There's no way I could dream to have tomorrow because today was worse enough that I did not want to go through it the next day. But you knew it's going to be the next day, the next week,
every single day, just repeat, repeat, repeat.
So you must have thought nothing of yourself.
I think in my head too, I trained myself to not even be hopeful.
Yeah.
You know, like you didn't want to dream or think about that there could be a better life for you. For me, no, not at all.
Was your mom loving?
Yes, mom was the most loving human being that I know. She did the best she could. But when you're getting abused every day, but your mom gets the same thing, you know, it's hard to protect your little ones when you cannot protect yourself. You know, to this day, I can remember that our mom spent more time in our room because she was hiding from my dad. So I know that she loved us. I know that she did everything she could so we could make it in life. You know, when I started school, so every time I needed a book, I could not ask my dad. I could not go to my dad and say, can I have a book? But I would go to my mom and say, hey, mom, the book ran out. Is there a way I could have another one? And my mom would go, but she would be the one to get the beatings first because I asked the book, you know, or because I asked the notebook.
So in some way, he would beat her for that?
Because
she would get me a book. Or she would ask on my behalf to get a book. So she would get the abuse on my behalf, you know. So I know she loved me in every shape, form you can imagine. But at the same time, I think as the oldest kids, who go through that, we want to protect our mothers, but we're too tiny. You're too small to do so. That sometimes I think I took the guilt on me. Like maybe had I not asked the food, she would not have done that. Had I not asked for a book, she would not have got those beatings in some way. That as a kid, you just didn't know what to do. And with my dad's anger, you just didn't know when, what time. It was any time, any day.
What did you feel about him? Did you hate him? Did you resent him? Or was that just normal because you knew nothing different?
No, I hated him, you know. But as I think as a little boy, what do you do? You know, to me, he seemed like a giant in every shape, form. And there was nothing I can do, but I hated him in every shape, form you could imagine.
Mm.
Yeah.
So that was what age?
Four or five.
So what happened? I mean, it sounds like this is a horrible story that's never going to get any better.
Oh, no. You know, and of course, I think as we get older, we get to understand abuse even deeper.
Yeah.
You know, so as I got eight, as I got, nine, I understood that, hey, this man is likely to take my life one day. And you're just waiting. When will that happen? You know, but at 10, one day, I think I woke up and I said, look, to give my dad an opportunity to kill me is not fair to me, that I would rather give it to someone else. You know, to me was I would rather die in the hands of another stranger than my own dad, because giving him the opportunity to kill me, I didn't want him to cry over my dead body in my head as a 10-year-old. That's what I thought.
Like, 10 years old.
Mm. You know, to let my dad kill me is giving him joy. So I am not going to do that. So one day I woke up and I went to the bus station. I'd never been 20 miles away from my village. And I went to the bus station. I asked the lady, I said, which bus goes the farthest? This is like 3 in the morning.
Did you walk to the bus station?
Yes, I walked to the bus station. It was about 4 or 5 miles away. And I asked the lady, which one? And the reason why I asked which one, I wanted to make sure that I go as far as I could.
Yeah.
Like he could never get to me.
Did you have money?
Yes, I had some money. As a little kid, I think I've always been really, entrepreneur in some way. So I had money and I always kept it in my shorts here.
How did you make your money?
Well, sometimes I will sell nuts, small little nuts or sugar cane. That's what I would sell. But I would keep it. I've always been frugal. So I would keep it just one day. If I need it, I can use it. Or if one day my mom needs it, I can give it to my mom. So that's how I had that money. So when I went to the bus station, I had enough for one ticket one way. So I got on that bus and I ran. And I can remember I had never been that far. And I was so worried that my dad wasn't going to come. So every car that passed by, I would hold on that bus so hard and hide under the chair. Mm. But also every time the bus stopped, I would try to stop it. As a 10-year-old, I thought I had the strength to stop the bus. So I was trying so hard. But of course, it stopped. But along the way, it took about 16 hours and I ended up in Kampala. But every moment took that long, but every hour I always thought he is right here and he's going to find me and he's going to kill me. But I made it to Kampala.
So you're 16 hours away.
16 hours away, 500 miles away.
Yeah. And you're still thinking he's going to find you.
Yes. That's the fear. When our abusers instill that in our mind and body that even when they're not there,
Did your mom know you were going to leave?
No, I did not tell anyone.
No.
I'm so sorry. I'm thinking about how many years of fear and dread you would wake up with. Like, that's so sad. I'm sorry that you went through that. So now you've run away. You're in a new city you've never been to before.
Ten years old.
Yeah, how are you going to survive?
And I don't speak the language. They speak a different language, So I'm in this city. But, where the bus stops, in Africa, the bus stops all stop in one spot. So you have hundreds of people. So I saw other kids who looked like me. They were cleaning up. They were gathering things. So I thought, it's better maybe to introduce myself or get to know these people. And one of them, for some reason, he saw me and he just said, hey, come over, hang out with us. And right there and then I knew I had found family,
Really?
They were dirty. They spoke different languages, but we would communicate in some ways.
Did they have parents?
No, they were also street kids, you know? And that's when I realized that, oh, okay, my life is going to be a street kid. And that's when I became a street kid.
But it was better than your beatings?
Oh, I mean, it was hard and harsher. At home, I was dreaming of, you know, having another day on the streets. You know, you're dreaming, will I have a next hour? Because you had to survive hour by hour, that you didn't know what was coming.
And you were sleeping under cars.
Under the bridges. But it was better because there were strangers who were abusing us. They were not my family, you know. So I think that was the difference. Getting abused from someone that I didn't know, it was acceptable in some way than my own father in a way. And that's how I met it on the streets of Kampala.
Mm.
So what happens? I mean, here we are. You're on the streets. You're 10 years old. There's still evil going on in your life.
Absolutely, yeah. So on the streets, I think this time I had resigned on life. Like in some way, like if I die today, I don't care, you know? But as street kids, we learned how to survive. We knew to be productive. We knew how to really make ourselves useful in some way. And our job was to always help people who needed help or who were lifting things that were heavy, especially food. Because it was easier to steal a banana and a potato while you're helping someone than take it. So they knew, hey, I gave you cheap labor, I get a reward. But if you're not rewarding me, I'll reward myself. I'm going to steal one. And that's how we survived, by really stealing. And we had a system. I steal bananas. The next street kid steals potatoes. The next one steals yam, or the other one cassava. So at the end of the day, we'll have enough food to eat under the bridge. You know, we would not take food to cook, only food we can roast because we'd burn trash. And in that way, that's how we make our meals at night. And that became my life. So I'd been on the streets for 1 year and have. And on the streets, you know, I think I was seen more like a stray animals. You know, I was garbage boy. No one ever called me by name ever. No one, for 4.5 years I lived on the streets, no one ever asked me, what's your name?
Never.
Never. I was a garbage boy. I was a good for nothing boy. I was a dog. That's how they referred to us most of the time. And that was my life. But I believed it because I smelled like an animal. I behaved, I ate in the same garbage as the dogs did. Sometimes would get there before the dogs get it because we wanted that meal, you know, fighting with the stray dogs. So for all those names, I think I believed it, that's who I was in a sense. You know, for 4.5 years, yes, life was just miserable every day. I think I slept on average an hour every 24 hours.
Why?
Because it was safer to be awake than be asleep. So most kids would die while they're sleeping. If you sleep under the car, if they drive away and you're under, then it's the end of your life. If someone is to harm you, it was always if you're sleeping. Or sometimes people would pour acid or fire or anything that was on fire, they would, you know, throw it on you. So in order to be safe from it, you had to be alert at all times. So that was really my life, to be alert and sleep in just an hour. That's all you could have.
So here you are, 14 and a half years old. No one calls you by name. You're surviving one day at a time, not even sleeping. And then what happened?
So one day I get to see one gentleman wearing glasses, khaki, and spoke English. And as a street kid, I was like, that's my target. So I was like, I'm getting food, either he wants or not.
Could you speak any English?
Yes, I could. You know, as street kids, we learned how to learn other languages, and English was one of them. So I follow him as he buys bananas. So as soon as he bought, I say, can I carry this to your car? He said, stop. He said, what is your name? So that rattled me. Like, wait a minute, you want to know my name? Why would you want to know my name? Because for all these years, no one had ever asked me my name. But also it scared me, because for anyone who was kind, always it came with abuse after. So in some way, him asking me my name made me more alert, more danger, run. But before I could take it, he gave me something to eat. You know, and he left. And so he came back, and next week he did the same. And I think for me, what made me even always look for him or anticipate his coming was because he called me by my name. You know,
he remembered your name?
Yes. And it was the only thing that really I looked towards for every Monday, that he's a stranger that would call me by my name, because, you know, for all these years, no one called me by my name.
What did that mean to you? You're somebody?
I don't know how to explain that, you know. When all life has been stripped of you, and in the midst of that, someone calls you by your name. I think for all these years, I had thought I was less of a human being.
Yeah.
Because I didn't have a name, or I wasn't referred to as a human being. You know, we refer to people by their names. I know Anne because she's called Anne, you know. I was called Peter, and that's who I was known. But for all those years, no one ever took the initiative in some way to say he's a human being.
So, to acknowledge you as a human being.
As a human being.
Yeah.
That's all I looked for on every Monday between 6 and 8 in the evening, for someone to say, hey, Peter. And that's all.
You have dignity.
Yeah.
I see you. All that in a name.
In a name.
Wow.
Which makes me, like, I know this is, it makes me think of people that are living on the streets who we don't look at them and we don't acknowledge them. We pretend that they're invisible in some ways, and you probably felt invisible in a lot of ways.
Mm-hmm. And I can guarantee you, for any of that street person, if you ever say, what's your name? See the reaction they'll give you, because no one ever bothers to ask them their name,
yeah.
You know? What's your name?
So what happened?
So this man ends up... What happened?
So he feeds me for 1 year and a half because he, you know, I think the fourth week I kind of knew where he drives, what car he drives, when he parks his car, what time he comes, what he buys. Like I knew to the T what he does. So I'll be waiting every Monday. So he fed me for 1 year and a half.
Did he do that with many of your friends or just you?
It was me, but he would give me enough to share. You know, he would always give me an extra. He'd give me bananas, or he'd give me cooked rice, or he would give me roasted cassava. Is an African root that we love to eat, you know. So he'll give me nuts, you know, roasted G nuts. We call them ground nuts. That's what he would give me or every time he came. And so he did that for a year and a half. And one day, we were sitting and just waiting for him to give me something. He said, like, hey, Peter, if you have an opportunity to go to school, would you like to go to school? You know, and I'm sitting there laughing like, what an idiot. Sorry to say that, but I'm kind of like, I'm a street kid.
Yeah,
I am
staying.
Like, why would you think of that? Like, why would you?
Have you spent ever one day in school?
Yes, I had gone through school between 6 and 9.
Okay.
So I had gone to school on and off.
Yeah.
You know, every time my mom could afford that $5, I would go for a semester. Think about when you've been reduced to nothing, to below humanity, and someone offers you a school, it's beyond what, you know, in my mind, it was more of like, wait a minute. To Americans, this is what I would say. I would say, both of you, would you like to go to the moon? Because they're about to send people to, would you like to go? But you're laughing. Do you know why?
It's not going to happen.
It's not like it's not going to happen. It's not something you go to bed dreaming about, you know?
Right.
You don't work for NASA. You're not into space. So in some way, when he said, would you love to go to school? That's when I was like, that's for human beings who have a place to be, who dream. I am not that kind, you know? So I did not pay attention. But he asked several times. So finally I said, you know what? I'm going to say yes. So he never have to ask me again.
Just stop it.
But also, I think I didn't want him to stop his food he was giving me. So I was like, what can I say that he will love to hear so I still get my food and get him off my back? So I said, yes, absolutely. And so he said, okay. So he came back and a week later, he brought me clothes, but he made a mistake. He asked me to go take a shower. As a street kid, I didn't bathe. I mean, I waited for God's rain to come. That's when I would shower. So for him saying, go clean up, to me, I felt like he was being arrogant. Like, don't you know where? Like, where would I go? So I said, no. So he came back 2 weeks later. He said, go clean up. Clean up was, and I understood what that meant. Because I can go wash my face and come back. So I went to the sewer, cleaned my face and came back. And he gave me clothes to wear. And he took me to school. But before he took me to school, he said, hey, when we go to school, it's a boarding school. And you're going to have lunch, dinner and breakfast. I mean, literally, I was like, that can't be true.
Like, how many meals were you eating a day?
I mean, we ate when we could at 3 a.m, you know. It was rare to have a real meal. It was more of, how do I survive? If someone was lucky, it would give it to you and you get to share with your other. So it wasn't something you count on.
At this point, did you know this man's name? Did you know anything about him?
No, I didn't know. I did not want to know his name.
Yeah.
Still suspicious?
Suspicious. Yeah. You know, you're kind, so you're going to hurt me. So I'm going to stay as far as I could, you know.
Yeah.
But towards school, I kind of knew his name. So then I, once he mentioned food, I was like, okay. Okay. I think from then, I didn't really think about school. I was about food. That can't be true. Food. And finally, he came and took me to school. And as we drove, I asked him, why me? Like, there are more than 2,000 kids in the streets of Kampala. Why me? And he said, Peter, I just want to be faithful. But I did not understand what that meant. I want to be faithful? Okay, you know. And so we went, and it was lunchtime. So they gave me lunch. So then I waited for dinner because he had said there'll be dinner. So it was more like curious, like, that can't be true. Can
Is
they?
This real?
So then I waited for dinner, and dinner came. But before I left the streets, I told my street kids, like, hey, if you don't see me in the next 24 hours, make sure you kill him or you do something harmful. Because I thought he's going to do something bad.
Right.
So I made sure that I left backup somehow.
Yeah, you know? To even get in a man's car.
Yes.
To drive, that's dangerous.
Absolutely. So I had to come back that night. But this is like 15 miles away. So I had to walk back at night to let them know that I was okay. Because they would have harmed him if I did not come.
They were your family.
Exactly. But then they said there was the breakfast, so I went back. So I go back on my walk. I don't know how long it took. You know, and actually when I arrived, it was breakfast. They were going for breakfast. So then I went in, I waited for breakfast. So I, in the process of waiting for next meal is what made me stay longer. It wasn't like I wanted to be a teacher. It wasn't like I loved school. To me, the process of waiting for the meal is what made me stay 1 day, 2 day, 3 day, a week. Then the second week, that's when I thought, wait a minute. For me to keep getting the food, I need to go to class. So now I knew the trick wasn't like I wanted to learn. No, it was if I need to keep this process of getting food, there's something I have to give in that I don't like. And that's meaning to attend class. So that's how I managed to go to school.
We'll hear a few takeaways from Dave and Anne in just a minute. But first, Peter's book is called Now I Am Known, How a Street Kid Turned Foster Dad Found Acceptance and True Worth. You can get a copy at familylifetoday.com. Well, Peter's story today brings our hearts back to our mission for godly families. As our valued listeners, you are the backbone of our mission. Just wanted to remind you, when you join us financially as a monthly partner, you can explore all the subjects we talk about here on Family Life Today. You can live on mission with early access to new products, special live events, resources to share, as well as membership in our exclusive social media groups. You can partner financially online at familylifetoday.com or by calling 800-358-6329. That's 800 F as in family, L as in life, and then the word today. And when you do give today, we want to send you a copy of Tim Uhlhoff's book, Eyes to See. Tim was a guest earlier this week on Family Life Today. It's our thanks to you when you partner financially with us today. Again, you can find us at familylifetoday.com. Okay, here's Dave and Anne with a few takeaways from today's conversation.
There's so much more to the story,
and
we're out of time, so you got to come back tomorrow and listen to the rest of the story. Here's one takeaway for me, the power of a name.
Mm-hmm.
Power of a name. You teared up, we teared up when you talked about him saying your name, and it's just so, it's our identity. Mm-hmm. It says we have dignity when somebody says our name.
And I would say, too, that I'm listening to this thinking like, oh, Jesus already knew your name.
Yes.
He had already called you and he had put people in your path because he had a hope and a future for you.
Correct.
And he has that for all of us. There's not one person that he doesn't know by name and love them and have something for them.
Now, tomorrow on Family Life Today, Dave and Ann Wilson continue the story with Peter Mutabatsi about how the true power of turning his life around was found through being affirmed by those around him. If he didn't have his new family, Peter would never have considered going to school or even living more than a street kid life. That's tomorrow. On behalf of Dave and Ann Wilson, I'm Shelby Abbott. We'll see you back next time for another edition of Family Life Today. Family Life Today is a production of Family Life, a crew ministry, helping you pursue the relationships that matter most.